It was the summer of love.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
510 on Ottawa Now. Zero out there and dark, cloudy skies. Though it's been quite mild the last couple of days, we've got some breaking news this hour. Earlier today, we told you an Ontario court struck down that controversial legislation, Bill 124, which capped wage increases for hundreds of thousands of people at 1%. It limited the wages for public sector workers. Well, the Ontario government this afternoon is telling CP24 that they intend to appeal the court's decision. The court struck it down, and the justice in his decision says that Bill 124 infringes on the applicant's right to freedom of association and collective bargaining. The Ontario government, not ready to take this, going to continue to fight. Several unions and workers, you know, affected by the bill have been very vocal. They've been fighting the legislation that came into effect in 2019. It limits wage increases to 1% a year for 3 years. The government said, we have to do this. It's a time-limited approach because we're in a deficit. But these groups were very upset, and they argued that it violated their right to collective bargaining. The province said that it didn't. Now, the province says they're going to appeal this decision. Doris Grinspun, who is with the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, will be joining us in about 6 minutes from now. Already, they have been urging the government, please do not appeal this, but the government says it is going to. So we'll chat with her coming up, 5:12.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
How do you think the last couple of days have been for the brand new term of council? Tumultuous, to say the least. This is a lot happening all at once at Ottawa City Hall. The veteran city manager resigning, the police services board being disrupted, the LRT inquiry report dropping tomorrow. Everyone is bracing for impact on that. It's pretty overwhelming for the new city councillors. And even when I had a returning councillor with much more experience, Jeff Leeper, on the show, he acknowledged that with me earlier. He was encouraging everybody to take a deep breath, to try and be thoughtful, to focus on the issues. And hopefully, he said, we'll end up in a more stable place a couple of months from now. But safe to say, it's going to be dramatic tomorrow. Looking ahead to tomorrow's LRT report, there is going to be a lot of criticism to go around, and there's going to be a fair share for the city of Ottawa. What do you think? And what do you think about the timing of Steve Kanellakos, the city manager, his departure? It hasn't gone unnoticed. It has sparked a lot of speculation from everyone across the city, including this former citizen transit commissioner.
In terms of accountability, I'm not sure that it's going to be as cathartic as, you know, we all would hope, given that right. Of the major players that, you know, within the senior members of City of Ottawa that were involved in this, i.e. Watson, Kanellakos, Manconi, and Councillor Hubley, there's only one person on that list that still works at the City of Ottawa. As of yesterday, obviously, Kanellakos resigned. That resignation to me signals that may not be the last resignation we see.
She said it felt like it was strategic on his part.
I think that it was a strategic move by Mr. Kanellakos because now he's a private citizen and not required to answer any questions in public about this report. It was a smart move by him strategically. It wasn't the most moral move to do, but that's his decision.
And as we heard from River Ward Councillor Riley Brockington yesterday on the show, the announcement was definitely a surprise to many people, including him.
Did not see that coming, at least for today. I know his contract was up at some point next year, but no, surprised to see that. Certainly appreciate his 38 years of public service, and he certainly deserves some time off, but no, we did not expect to see that today.
Same goes for Bay Ward City Councillor Teresa Cavanaugh, who said this.
I think we all expected that this would be the year he would retire. He keeps repeating how many years he's been with the city, and that's 38 years. That's a long time. And with the new mayor coming in, Well, this report coming down, I think we all expected that, you know, this might be the year he would, call it a day. Mm-hmm. But so suddenly, that took us off guard.
In his announcement, in his resignation, Steve Kanellakos said, "The decision was mine. Nobody was forcing me out. I'm leaving because I want to." But we know that this report is dropping tomorrow. And we also know yesterday that members of council were briefed on legal affairs about LRT at the city council meeting. They went in camera, so we don't know exactly what was said, but they were given a briefing. I want to get on to our listeners here, like Tim in Westboro. Here's what he had to say.
I think that he has an understanding of what's going to be in there, and he's getting out while the getting is good. Who is left to be accountable for this? You know, tomorrow, you know, there'll be some kind of press conference or something. Who is going to be there to answer the questions? Not Kanellakos, not Manconi, nobody.
That's the thing. The head of OC Transpo is gone. Manconi retired in 2021. He's now down in Texas. Jim Watson chose not to run again. The city manager, Steve Kanellakos, resigned yesterday. Alan Hubley is the last man standing. He's the head of the Transit Commission. He's the only one who ran again. He got back in, and he's still here. What implications is this going to have for him? What other findings are going to be part of this report? And even though, as we heard from our lawyer friend who joined us, Aaron Durant, even though the job is not to place any legal liability on anyone, there is a lot of court cases. There's a lot of litigation going on, various players fighting with each other through the law, money being held back. So it could have an impact on that. It is really going to be, I think, a monumental moment in all of this to finally read this report. As for Tim, he says he hopes the new council will be back up to the challenge to try and rebuild the trust with City of Ottawa residents.
I mean, they're in a tough situation. Poor Mark Sutcliffe, you know, he didn't ask for this, but, he's going to have to handle it. I do feel sorry for him.
Not an easy job. Not an easy job. I do not envy this new mayor. I do not envy these new city councilors and the returning ones. What a week. I mean, it has been a roller coaster ride. Angela, another one of our regular listeners. We called her up on the phone. She says she's anxious to hear the report, but she shouldn't be too surprised at the outcome, that we shouldn't be, because she said it doesn't really hold much weight.
Steve Kanellakos is retiring. Optics don't look good, but on the other hand, he's the only senior bureaucrat left that would have to take the heat. Watson and Manconi have left. Note that all of them will be getting a severance package and a pension with no accountability.
With how things have gone with the inquiry so far, and the main players exiting, retiring, resigning, Angela says her hopes aren't high.
It's disappointing. I have low expectations. I'm hoping for the best. I hope they change my mind in the actions that they take. But the bureaucracy for these projects needs to be revised.
Another person on the text board here says no accountability for any of them. Typical politics BS. Aaron from Stittsville says, I think the city councilor's departure is a sign of guilt, sadly. I'm not sure if she means city manager there, Steve Kanellakos, or if she means some of the other people who didn't run again, like the veteran city councilors that didn't come back. Paloma says we want accountability. Maybe I'm jaded and cynical surrounding the LRT, but suddenly bowing out at the 11th hour doesn't seem optically like he's falling on the sword. It seems like a see ya, don't wanna be ya. Sandy says, just because Kanellakos knew to resign 2 days before he knew the report was going to be released, he should still be held accountable for what he signed off on. 38 years as a city employee, he knew becoming a citizen and no longer being an employee that he cannot be questioned about the report, that he's exempt from that. As a taxpayer, I am crying foul because it seems to me like everybody knows where the loopholes are. Another scandal. It doesn't surprise me.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
The Ontario government says it intends to appeal this court decision that struck down the bill, the controversial bill that was limiting wages for public sector workers. Joining us right now live with some reaction, we want to hear from the nurses on this. As you know, they were passionately speaking out against this bill, saying that it needed to be ripped up. Here's the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association, Doris Grinspoon. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me, Christy. And if you had me like half an hour ago, I would have been happier than now.
And how about now?
Well, because it's unconscionable that the Premier is already planning to appeal. He should not. I begged him, I plead to him, I still am pleading to him to uphold the court decision and to move on to a better place. This is just absolutely unconscionable for him to come out and say that he plans to appeal it.
Where is this going to go next?
To the streets. That's the only thing I can think, because I don't see how the public sector workers as a whole and all healthcare professionals that have given it all, they have given it to the last drop of their energy, can respect a premier that is saying in the face of a court appeal that struck down Bill 124 to say that he will appeal. It's unconscionable. He knows the situation and it's unconscionable.
Did you expect they were going to appeal?
I was afraid, and I texted him and I asked him and I WhatsApp about that and I tweeted about that. I thought the premier will take the rein on the situation as he has done in other instances, and he does understand the situation, and the fact that he's deciding to actually hear those that are pushing him to appeal, or he himself is deciding to appeal, is simply unconscionable, is infuriating.
When you said, did you say the streets? When I asked you where this is going next?
Well, what else? I mean, people are asking already for a general strike. And, you know, we have not joined that call of a general strike. But the Premier is cornering everybody. And maybe that's what he wants. But if that's what he wants, he should have done it before elections. Not now. It's not okay. It's not okay.
Hmm. But what do we do right now? Because, I mean,
what do we do? What do we want? To close all the hospitals, to close all the emergency departments, to close all primary care, home care, etc. If that's what the premier wants, then those that are saying that what he wants really is to privatize are correct. That's all I can say. And then he has parliamentary assistants standing on the legislature laughing and mocking those that are saying that that's the real intent. But you wonder, that's the real intent? Well, if he's going to appeal this decision of the court, that's the intent.
So what are you saying? That people are going to continue holding rallies outside, like we saw at Sunnybrook Hospital? Or are you saying people...
I don't think you have seen anything of what this province will see. You may remember during Mike Harris, the Days of Action, and how that looked like. You may remember in 1996 when RNAO took all the nurses and the public to the street. And if that's what the premier wants, that's what the premier will have. But that's not what nurses want. That's not what the public wants. We want to provide good care, good services. And we need a premier that understands the dire situation.
Doris, do you have a dialogue back and forth with the health minister?
I do.
Do you have a direct line today? Can you pick up? I'm actually asking, can you pick up the phone? Can you call the minister? Could you call the premier? Can you have these discussions by phone today?
I offered to him to call me already. Mm-hmm. I met with the premier and I met with the deputy premier, Minister of Health, Sylvia Jones. And I meet often with Minister Calandra. They know how dire is the situation.
Yeah, but are these conversations actually taking place, not just the offer of them?
They are. They are taking place. What's not taking place, obviously, is that it's not getting through. Because if the premier, instead of saving face because of a court decision and saying we are going to uphold the court decision and respect it and move on, if the premier is now already saying he's going to appeal it, it says it's not getting through. Whatever we are doing is not getting through. But that's damaging to Ontarians. This is not only damaging to nurses or to teachers or to other healthcare professionals or service or public sector employees. This is damaging to Ontarians, to this province.
Doris, what about when the government says that this, they said in 2019, that this is a time-limited approach to help eliminate the provincial debt?
What debt when we actually have more money on the coffins than before?
Do you believe that it is time-limited?
So the developers in the Greenbelt, is that what we are talking? Well, let's talk cold turkey then. If it's to give more money to developers or to others that are making money on the backs of public sector employees, let's say it. Let's say it. Let's be honest about that. But that should have happened before the elections. Before the elections, he said he will protect the Greenbelt. It's not happening. Before the elections, the talk that the premier did post-election, you may remember, and I was glued to the television, and I congratulated him for the talk, and he was elected, duly elected, and I said, we are working together with you. Let's make this a good thing for Ontarians. He said he was going to work with everybody. He knew people were hurting. He said he knew nurses were hurting. He will work with the unions. And today he's saying he's going to appeal a court decision. This is not one person in one organization that said we need to strike. We have already called for this bill to be repealed. Today the court decided that.
Yeah.
It's the perfect time for the premier to come out, I said, and say, we will respect the court decision. We are moving forward and working together with everybody for the sake of Ontarians to respect his own speech when he won the elections. That's what he needs to do.
Doris, I'm running out of time here because our news is next, but have you received any confirmation or any word that you'll be able to speak to the minister?
Not today.
Have you heard anything back? The text messages, the tweets, have you heard anything back?
I didn't contact the minister today.
No.
Contacted the premier.
Okay.
And I have not received any response to that message.
In the last 30 seconds I have with you here, if you were speaking to the premier or the minister, the province directly right now, what would you say?
I would say, premier, safe face. Let's move together forward for the sake of Ontarians. You are a man that needs to respect your own word. You said you know and you understand people are hurting. You said you will work with public sector employees. Today is the day to say we're not appealing that decision of the court.
Thanks for the time. We're at a racetrack, Doris.
Thank you very much.
Doris Grinspun, who's the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, 5:30. Your news coming up right now.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
What an incredible story yesterday that 40 years after two women were killed, police were able to link their murders together through DNA and they were able to make an arrest. Joseph Sutherland arrested for the deaths of two Toronto women. It happened in 1983, these killings. And it was all because of a DNA breakthrough. It's made international headlines, and it is an exciting time for DNA mining technology. What potential does this have to help us solve these cases? Nicole Navrosky is an assistant professor of forensic genetics at U of T. She was on News Talk today earlier with Deb Hutton to talk about the tool that police used to help solve these cold cases. Deb asked her, give us your perspective on how all of this happens in the world of solving cold cases. What is it that investigators actually do and where do they get that information?
So investigative genetic genealogy or forensic genetic genealogy, there are a variety of terms out there now, really started a handful of years ago with the Golden State Killer case. And before that, genealogists were obviously doing investigations on their own. But the DNA part really came to light or really came to the spotlight with the Golden State Killer case, where investigators, in theory, just took advantage of the public DNA databases that are used for genetic genealogy to run a forensically relevant DNA sample against the DNA samples that were already uploaded into the public database. So since that time, we've really seen this expansion in cold cases being solved, either when it comes to violent crimes like homicides and sexual assaults or other crimes of that nature, as well as in the missing persons or unidentified human remains arena. And so we're seeing just an influx of cases being solved, because what we have to remember is that a lot of the cases that we're seeing being solved are cases that date back to pre-DNA testing. DNA testing really came online in the mid-1980s and then has expanded since then. And now, you know, it's become conventional or routine in our criminal justice systems around the world. But genealogy has really had its big spotlight or shining light with regard to cases that had forensic evidence collected prior to our traditional typing methods.
And what are traditional typing methods? What does that mean?
Right. So commonly what you'll see in the courtroom right now, if a forensic lab or a forensic scientist comes to testify, is a standard DNA profile that utilizes or captures short tandem repeats or STRs. And these are very specific regions in a person's genome that we target for human identity purposes. Now, genetic genealogy is looking pretty much at the entire human genome of an individual and really making those connections or establishing that kinship or that relationship between individuals based on so much more information than just those specific markers that we use in our regular conventional DNA testing. But I will say that genetic genealogy really is an investigative lead. So to the point of what the investigators said, they utilize genealogy to really narrow down to a potential suspect pool. And then from there, issued that warrant to collect a DNA sample that would then be processed through our traditional methods to compare back to the forensic evidence to make that concrete determination that we would then utilize in the criminal justice system.
So it points you in the right direction, sort of gives you a narrower scope, but then still has to move forward with a warrant.
Right. So every jurisdiction is going to be different. Canada, yes, we require a warrant. The United States, Europe, other places in the world may do things differently in terms of how they go about getting that DNA sample. But ultimately, genetic genealogy is a wonderful tool that we are utilizing to solve all of these cases, but we still have to follow our policies and the legislation in order to properly apprehend a suspect according to what laws are in place, so that we are staying, you know, by the book, and that the science innately is going through that rigorous process and we are ending up drawing the correct conclusions.
We're speaking with Nicole Navrosky, who's an assistant professor and forensic geneticist at the University of Toronto Mississauga campus. So is this really at its core all about the sort of fun and interesting Christmas gift type things of 23andMe and Ancestry.ca? Is this why we are seeing much more of this happening?
I think that's how it all started. So when we... Going back to the Golden State Killer case, it was really just dependent on those individuals who had purchased those kits and uploaded them into GEDmatch or a similar public database. But now, with kind of the fast-paced nature of genetic genealogy, both within the forensic arena and then within the investigator arena, because we are seeing substantial growth, you know, with law enforcement agencies utilizing this technology, we're seeing crime labs wanting to implement this technology in their own labs. We are seeing a little bit of a shift so that our databases are a little bit more comprehensive, but also a little bit more thorough in terms of the checks and balances of samples going into those databases. And what we're also seeing is private companies, so DNASolves.com, that has the information related to the case that we're talking about today, you can actually submit your DNA sample directly to them, and then they store it in their private database. So we are moving into this weird area of growth, but also a little bit more confusion in terms of how the the DNA databases are working. But ultimately, I think the end goal with utilizing this technology is getting to a place where everybody is on the same page and that we're doing as good and best science as we possibly can to inevitably solve cases and contribute to society and close some of these cases and make the appropriate arrests and or make the appropriate identifications.
So is part of your caution there around public consent? I'm not sure I was really understanding the sort of making sure we're all on the same page with these different databases.
So I guess I meant that from a professional standpoint, making sure like all of the forensic labs and the investigators and the private companies are working together to provide the best possible service to society. But I would say that, yes, a lot of what we've seen so far, especially with those public DNA databases, consent is the number one thing that is focused on when you are uploading that DNA sample, right? You are consenting to provide that DNA sample. And the argument and a hot topic still debated is the fact that your family members may not be consenting, even though you are. And that just makes it an interesting time for genetic genealogy. And as we continue to advance in this field, we will hopefully get to a place where we're serving the most amount of individuals and we're doing it in the best way possible.
Any downsides? I have about 20 seconds.
I mean, I just think that education is key, being aware of how the databases work, being aware of how forensic DNA typing works. It's just really, really important. And I like that forensic DNA is being discussed more now. And so a greater number of people are understanding kind of how we solve crime using DNA.
Every day we randomly draw a winner in CFRA's online contest where you can win $100 worth of lottery tickets. Today we're giving away a LottoMax voucher. If you want to be in the draw, all you need to do, go to our website, cfra.com, and you could be entered to win a $100 Lotto 649 or Lotto Max voucher. We reveal the name of the winner live on Ottawa Now. Today's winner, Stephen Mallory.
Winner, Gagnon.
Congratulations, Stephen. You won yourself a $100 Lotto Max voucher. Go online, CFRA.com, for your chance to be the next winner. Tonight's estimated Lotto Max draw is $60 million plus six Max Millions. Good luck. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today, and what a show it's been. I think some really worthwhile conversations. This topic of Bill 124, you can expect that to be raging tomorrow. It is my personal hope, and I was trying to get at this with Doris, but we were running out of time, that we can actually have some back and forth dialogue between the government and the nurses and all of the other public sector workers that are impacted, because otherwise this is just going to continue to be duked out in the courts. And that's exactly what it sounds like. Although the Ontario court struck this down today, the Ford government is planning to appeal. Doris Grinspun is reaching out saying, talk to me. Hopefully they can have those conversations on the phone. I know a lot of people are passionate. They're texting in on this. We'll get back to that tomorrow. We'll also be right into the LRT inquiry and the final report. One city councillor who was kind of seen formerly, she didn't actually run again. Now she's an ex-city councillor, but she was formerly seen as the opposition voice around City Hall. Diane Deans, no longer on council, but watching this closely, and will be joining us tomorrow on the show as we unpack that report. Have a great night. Stay warm, stay safe, and we'll speak with you tomorrow.